searching podcasts for The Daily Perspective. Okay, The Daily Perspective podcast coming up.
The Democrat Party has become too extreme to be trusted with power. Their radical policies are a danger to your family and to your country.
Amen and amen, the congregation said. Amen. Hi there. Welcome into this Friday, Valentine's Day edition of the Daily Perspective Podcast. Mark Congleton here, your sometimes humble host for this hour of observation, insight, and a bit of absurdity, hoping you are having a fantastic day so far. Regardless of where or when you may be listening, I appreciate you being there. If you are on Facebook Live, hi, good to have you along for the ride. If you're on the podcast, same to you, buddy. And yes, it is Valentine's Day. It is indeed Valentine's Day. And it's Black Friday for Hallmark, for florists, for candy purveyors, for the Pajamagram people, and all those other guys who market specifically for Valentine's Day. Congratulations to you guys. And because it's not a holiday. It's a day when a lot of people in the retail industry make a chunk of money. It's because guys want to be nice to their girls. And that's really what it all boils down to. No, I'm not a hopeless romantic. Thanks for noticing. It is it's the Friday edition of the podcast. I hope you're doing well, and I'm in trouble now. I see if Jane listens to this, she's going to give me a talking to, aren't you, hon? Yes, you are. It is it's the end of the week. Here where I live, it looks like things are finally drying out. I'm looking out the studio, the windows over here, and I see sunshine for the first time in days. And I understand that we are going to have a couple of days of some sunshine. Things will dry out a bit, and it's a bit chillier than it has been, going down into the 20s here tonight. And it's just nice for a change, for there not to be water falling out of the sky. And that's kind of what it amounts to. I'm glad for that. Very, very glad for that. Let's see, what else is going on around here? I don't have much to report on yesterday because I didn't need to venture out for anything yesterday, so no weird stuff happened to me. Nothing weird except weird, bizarre technical things going on with website production. That's all for me. And it's a really odd thing because I keep having this issue where I'll be working on the website I'm currently working on, and suddenly I can't. It logs me out. It bumps me out. And when I try to log back in, it says, no, that's not the right password. And when I try to, I try everything. And I don't rely on my memory or a pad or anything like that for passwords. I use LastPass. I use LastPass to generate passwords and to log all of my passwords. So I go back to LastPass and copy and paste that information back in, and it doesn't work. Nope. Not recognized. Don't know you. Sorry. Park's closed. Moose out front. Should have told you. So I'm in that situation with it, and it's happened to me twice. And I've gone to my web hosts, the folks over at DreamHost, who've been they've been awesome for me. They've just been awesome. I've been on web host for how long? Well over 10 years, 10, 15 years or so, something like that. And I've got a handful of websites, and I'm developing a site now for my friend Brian. And the deal is that it kicks me out. And the only thing that remedies the issue is going into the web control panel of my account and having it restore the most recent backup of the site. And then everything works. So something is corrupting the website, and I don't know what's going on. And it's just weird stuff. But I'm having a back and forth with DreamHost about it, and they're scratching their heads too, which is not a good sign. Just in case you're keeping track, it's not a good sign. Well, I hope you have great plans for this weekend, that you'll take your significant other and enjoy a little one-on-one time together, have a decent meal together, go out for an evening, and And wow, everybody's doing that, by the way. So be prepared. If you haven't planned, what were you thinking? Because everything's going to be packed up. It's Valentine's. It just is. And I was thinking about this earlier, about going, what we're going to do tonight. And I think what we're going to do is probably just go to one of our haunts, one of our familiar places, which is much less likely to be mobbed by Valentiners than other places. And because it's in a small town, it's about a half an hour from where we live, and we have to travel back through the hills to get to it. And no, it's not like I live in Tennessee. It's a little Mexican place that we go to on Friday nights occasionally, and we split an order of fajitas and some cheese dip, and just exhale and relax after the week. And I think that's what we'll probably do tonight. And it'll be, what is this now? It's three consecutive days I've had Mexican food. Sometime over the weekend, I will melt. That's just, but that's probably what we'll do. What is it? Yesterday, I stopped by this place. I've been seeing it on my regular route heading across town to go work for the Dawson Now podcast. And I read somewhere about this place coming. I overheard somebody talking about it months ago, right after it opened. And I decided, for the first time, around lunchtime, I saw a bunch of cars out front. And I thought, okay, it has established itself. So people are liking it. So they've got a clientele now that they've got. There was one free parking space, one in the parking lot. So I said, okay, then. So I slipped on in there and gave it a shot. And that's it's hard to even call it a restaurant, because you can walk up and order at the counter and then go have a seat. They'll bring it to you. And it is a restaurant, but it's not like they're working to refill your drinks and stuff. That's not, they have all the drinks they have are in a cooler up front. You grab a bottle or something or a can on your way to your table. And they sell tacos and burritos and things like that. It's a little Mexican restaurant, and it's actually run by Mexicans, and it is and everything is very authentic. So much so that the parts of the menu are a mystery because they're things you can figure it out. What is this? Oh, I see what this is. And if you don't speak Spanish, the menu is just kind of like, woo, let me get my phone and look that up, because it's not. Well, it's obviously geared towards the Hispanic workers who are in the area, and there's a trailer park very close by, which is just populated by like 99.99% Mexicans. So that's who they're catering to. So I stopped by there yesterday. It wasn't yesterday. It was the day before, and then we had our semi-famous taco soup last night, and now we're talking about fajitas tonight. It's just a matter of time before my digestive tract says, no more spices. That's it for you. And over the weekend, if you look towards Alabama and see a pillar of smoke, that's me. It is the 14th of February, 2020, Valentine's Day, and I hope you and yours are doing well. I really do. And let's see, we like to talk about what I think is an absurd story off the top in the podcast. And this one I saw yesterday and thought, that's the one. I don't know if you saw this story yesterday, but it jumped up at me like a little yappy dog wanting attention. The Canadian Armed Forces, they've been looking at the roles and realized, wow, we're really light on women. We don't have a whole lot of ladies signing up here. What do we do about that? What do we do about that? Well, in an effort to increase the number of women in the military, according to strategy documents which have been released, the Canadian Armed Forces is looking to redesign uniforms that are worn by the female troops. What it amounts to is that they think they're too frumpy. That's really the, I could read the whole story to you. And I may read segments of it to you, but what it boils down to is that the Canadian Armed Forces think their ladies' uniforms are too frumpy. So what are they going to do? They're going to make the skirts shorter and tighter. So the uniforms, the dress uniforms for the ladies in the Canadian Armed Forces, they're going to tighten the skirts and make them shorter. Recruiting analysts noted in the documents that women now make up more than 50% of Canada's population, but only constitute 15.9% of those serving in the Canadian Armed Forces. This is coming from The Citizen. The CAF aims to bump that number up to 25% by 2026. They got 6 years to do this. The analysts outlined the challenges the CAF faces when it comes to female recruitment. According to them, women are uncomfortable with a profession that involves combat and the potential killing of people, especially innocent people. They're also worried about sexual harassment, analysts cited in the documents. They said that in the documents. The CAF has formed a specialized Tiger team to explore the issue of female recruitment. One of the problems the Tiger team identified had to do with the current uniforms. The organization that selects the Canadian military styles is, quote, composed of middle-aged males whose outlook is not reflective of current trends amongst the target demographic. They said that at least 25% of members on the Canadian Armed Forces Dress Committee should be women. The team also suggested current skirts issued to female troops should be slimmer and shorter. A proposal involved a recruiting ad aimed at young women. The concept for the video called for a female soldier to take her helmet off as male and female co-workers gather and agree to have a campfire at a sandy beach. Afterwards, the group would grill marshmallows, laughing and relaxing. The Tiger team said this video would show friendship. Other suggestions contained in the documents proposed a social media post with an image of a female soldier throwing a grenade. The caption would read, "Of course I throw like a girl, but I never miss." Some Canadian commenters criticized the CAF's recruitment methods. National Post columnist Marnie Supkoff, in response to the plan to shorten women's skirts, said, "Well, that's not an especially flattering portrayal of female values." Marnie, thanks for your comments, honey. But I think you're missing the point here. I mean, Do you really have to be above average intelligence to ask the question? If they make the skirts shorter and tighter, won't that increase male recruitment? Of course it will. Of course it will. I mean, the guys are going to see those ads and say, "Wait, there's women in the military. Hey, let's go." I'm signing up. Look, hot chicks in the Canadian Armed Forces. Oh, man. Hey, maybe this will actually drive some of those people in America who swore to move to Canada if Trump won. Maybe they'll finally go and sign up. Maybe they'll finally leave. Do you think that could happen? This is the kind of garbage. This is the kind of bat bleep crazy that you end up getting when committees are involved making these decisions. They sit down and they have these chats and they think, "Oh, that'd be a great idea. That's awesome. Let's do this. Everybody will love it." And if you're honest and you've been around for a while like I have, you've been in that meeting where somebody raises a hand and says, "I've got an idea. Let's do this." And everybody with any kind of life experience or experience in the field, that whatever field you happen to be in at the time, will raise an eyebrow and shake their head and go, "Wow." And someone will try to explain, "Yeah, well, you know why nobody does that? Oh, yeah, nobody does that. It's a genius idea. We should do this because nobody's doing this." And you explain to them, "Yeah, the reason nobody does that is because every time it's been tried, and it's been tried many times, it has failed miserably, and here are the reasons why." And then you can actually explain to that particular person why that doesn't work. And if they are an honest, decent, thoughtful, intelligent person, they will actually say, "Oh, I didn't think about that." But if they're, oh, I don't know, a progressive, a leftist, a liberal, they will accuse you of some sort of hate crime, pick up their stuff, stomp out, pick up their toys, and go home. Or they'll say something like, "That's not an especially flattering portrayal of female values." Or they'll completely miss the fact that tightening and shortening the skirts of the ladies' uniforms in the Canadian Armed Forces isn't really going to attract any women because they're not all that militarily minded. They know there are other things they'd rather do with their lives. But doggone it, when you show those uniforms in public in those recruitment campaigns, your male number's going to go up. Oh, gosh, you just can't make this stuff up. You just can't make it up.
This portion of the show is being brought to you by Honest Ed's Used Cars, where every car we sell is backed by an ironclad guarantee that is so complete and comprehensive that we really don't see any need to put it in writing. And remember Honest Ed's motto: if any used car dealer anywhere in the country says he can sell you the same car cheaper than we will, then he's even a bigger liar than I am.
Oh, Honest Ed's. By the way, Ed, the check bounced. Again, it's the Friday edition of The Daily Perspective. Hi there, Mark Congleton here with you. Hopefully you're having a big old day. Looking forward to a big old weekend. Oh, man, I almost want to file this next story under the absurd banner, but I can't, because sometimes absurdity is real and it's very wrong and it's insane. It's just crazy. And we've seen things happen, pushed by government, by progressive government, so many times, and it fails every time because progressive government doesn't understand how life really works. You have to remember that all of these people on the left in government, they studied, they committed their entire lives, the vast majority of them, to work in politics, not in the real world. They got poli-sci degrees. As soon as they got out of college, they started working in Democrat campaigns. They've become community organizers and things like that. They don't work in the real world. They work in the political world of theory, the world of political theory. They don't have any connection with how life really works. They get an income from speculating about the lives of other people and how they can be made better, not about actually working in the fields, so to speak, by actually holding down real jobs and learning what management means in those real jobs and learning what ownership means in those real jobs. They never do that. Here's an example. AOC, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, she has proposed some of the most bizarre Marxist legislation. She was a bartender. She worked in a bar serving drinks. She didn't run the bar. She didn't own the bar. She worked as a bartender. Now, I don't know about you, but when my wife and I go to restaurants, on occasion that we do, I see on a regular basis, I see signs up behind bars while we're waiting for a table or whatever, that they're looking for help. They're looking for more bartenders. Apparently, bartending is like a revolving door job. A lot of people, they come and they go. It's not a kind of a job, unless you own the place, that's going to be giving you an education about the way business really works. But that's just one of many, many examples. It's all political theory. It's those people on the left. Progressives. And there are progressives on the right who are the same, have the same fault. They have the same problem because they don't understand real life. They didn't come from the business world. They didn't have to support themselves. They didn't have to support others. It's all about theory. Well, another theory is coming up, which if we don't pay attention to and it gets passed, will do an awful lot of harm to this nation. It will damage the economy severely. House Democrats are proposing that all banks and credit unions receive a new diversity and inclusion rating in an unprecedented step that would fundamentally alter federal regulators' critical CAMELS rating. That's C-A-M-E-L's rating. It's a rating system that currently employs a series of metrics that solely assess, they solely assess the financial health of banking institutions. The Promoting Diversity and Inclusion in Banking Act of 2019 is draft legislation supported by Democrats on the House Subcommittee on Diversity and Inclusion, which was created by House Financial Services Committee Chairwoman Maxine Waters. Yep. Waters has long pushed for government-led diversity efforts, even as Republicans have challenged her knowledge of fundamental economic issues. Representative Al Green, the Democrat bird brain from Texas, said at a Wednesday hearing held by the subcommittee, "We need to change it, and we need to change it right away. The excuse that we can't find any," that's what I'm hearing from some of you, "that's not acceptable. When you have power, you have to use it. We have the power. Regulations may be the thing to do. I think the carrot was a good idea, but after having heard some things today, I think we have to move the stick." That's regulations. Did you catch that? When you have power, you have to use it. And then he refers to the government and says, "We have the power. Regulations may be the thing to do." In other words, force the banking business to include diversity and inclusion in their decision making. This kind of thinking from the left has been done before. It was back during the Clinton administration. And as a result, the housing market almost destructed itself when banks were required to grant mortgage loans to people whose credit records showed that they could not and would not pay the loans back. And it was all couched in race. It was all about racism. And that's what this is. Last night, my wife and I were watching Tucker Carlson. And Tucker Carlson did a segment on this.
"I told you about the New Way Forward Act. If passed, that law would welcome dangerous, violent criminals into the United States, let them stay here even if they commit more crimes, and then, amazingly, require taxpayers to pay for criminals who've already been deported to come back to our country. You'd get to buy plane tickets for armed robbers to move here from Guatemala. It's lunatic. The bill wouldn't just remake American immigration policy, it would remake the country itself. That's the point, of course. As supporters of the bill often say, openly, America's criminal justice system is racist. If you want crimes punished and criminals kept out of your country..."
He's getting there, I promise.
"Only a truly radical party would consider a piece of legislation like that. The Democratic Party of 2020 is every bit that radical. If Democrats win this year's presidential election, some version of this insanity will almost certainly become law. But immigration isn't the only issue on which Democrats have become dangerously radical. It's now virtually every issue, including, believe it or not, banking regulation. America has about 8,000 separate banks and credit unions, and every one of them receives what's called a CAMELS rating. The rating evaluates a bank's financial health based on its assets, earnings, sensitivity to market risk, and other relevant factors. Crucially, all six parts of a CAMELS score are financial in nature, as you would imagine, or related to running a functioning business. Bad CAMELS scores don't just mean a bank is in danger of failing and that investors should be wary of it. No, low scores frequently trigger regulatory intervention by the federal government. They can destroy a bank. It's a big deal. Now, congressional Democrats are pushing to add a seventh factor to the CAMELS rating, a nakedly political one. A bill called the Promoting Diversity and Inclusion in Banking Act is currently working its way through the House. The bill would impose a so-called diversity mandate on banks if they want to stay in business. Now, we're not talking about diversity of assets. That might make sense. No, This is the age of wokeness. Nobody cares about math anymore. Instead, regulators would monitor banks to see that they're providing enough anti-bias training and would keep track of their hiring practices based on race. They get out the ledger and see what color everyone is. Any bank with more than $1 billion in assets would be required by law to have something called a diversity and inclusion officer reporting directly to the CEO. Now, why are Democrats doing this? To make the country better? Right. No. It's a shakedown, like everything else they do. Listen to this strikingly clear explanation from the House Financial Services Subcommittee on Diversity and Inclusion.
We need to change it, and we need to change it right away.
Agreed.
The excuse of we can't find any, that's what I'm hearing from some of you. That's not acceptable. When you have power, you have to use it. We have the power. Regulations may be the thing to do. I think the carrot was a good idea, but after having heard things today, I think we've got to move now to the stick. That's regulations.
When you have power, you got to use the stick. That's Congressman Al Green of Houston. At the same hearing, Green peppered witnesses with questions about whether it was time for, quote, race-conscious regulations in banking. You probably had no idea race had anything to do with banking. And most Americans, of course, had no idea that any of this was going on. But banks got the message loud and clear. Higher diversity commissars, the same kind that have done so much to destroy higher education in America, or the feds will crush you. So where are congressional Republicans while this has been going on? We'll take a guess. As is so often the case, they're playing along. At the same diversity subcommittee hearing, ranking member Ann Wagner of Missouri praised banks for their work instituting unconscious bias training. By the way, something that has never been shown to do anything other than deepen racial wounds and divide this country. Ever. Now, it's a given that all of this is stupid and wasteful and divisive. It certainly is. But it's also dangerous to the country. So we already know what happens when the government pressures financial institutions to make financial decisions based on political considerations.
And that's what I was talking about earlier. When the banking industry was commanded to give loans to people they knew would never pay them back.
Thank God it's Friday!
Oh, yeah. It is Friday. The weekend ahead. Couple of days to relax, unwind, or possibly get deeply buried in something else to keep you busy. Who knows? In your life, you may have a lot of stuff happening that has to happen over the weekend because you're working all week long. The honey-do list is getting longer and longer. Well, dive into it. Have a good time with it. Make it all happen. Oh, man, we were talking about this Democrat radical idea requiring banks to receive critical diversity and inclusion ratings. And they're talking about, of course, imposing leftist ideology, progressive ideology, on the hiring practices and other practices of banks. So they have to have a diversity and inclusion law to make this happen. And you and I have seen this happen. If we're being honest, we've watched this happen in the workplace when there were quotas instated and businesses had to hire a certain number of minorities. You have 100 employees, X number must be minorities. Whether and if you can't find qualified candidates, well, you wind up hiring people who aren't qualified. And that's not good for business, and it's not good for the employees or the employee who was hired to fill a quota. It's just not good. And to pretend that that's not what's going on here is to be disingenuous. And Tucker Carlson, before the break, was talking about what happened before, the experience we've had before when the government got involved.
We've seen it recently. Starting in the early 90s and continuing through both Democrat and Republican administrations, banks faced steadily rising pressure to make more risky loans to borrowers with lower income, thinner credit histories and a much greater risk of default. Banks complied. They were afraid not to. So millions of Americans received subprime loans. Remember that? Down payments were cut or eliminated altogether. In most cases, the intentions behind this weren't bad, actually. The government wanted more people, especially people in minority groups, to own homes. Again, that's a laudable goal. Home ownership is a good thing for everyone. It gives all of us a stake in our society, something to be proud of, and by the way, a legacy to leave our children. But the way to promote home ownership is to make homes less expensive and to create an economy robust enough that people can afford to buy them. They didn't do that. They ignored reality. That doesn't work. It never works. But for years, the government demanded that banks follow the rules, whether they made sense or not. And the result, as you remember, was the 2008 financial meltdown. It was the worst economic crisis in this country in 80 years, since 1929. America still has not recovered from it, nor apparently has Congress learned a thing.
And he's absolutely correct about that. We had a huge meltdown. We had this horrible result of what progressives demanded that we put into effect. And it was because progressives were doing what they always do, which is playing the part of the hero, coming to the defense of the downtrodden, working on behalf of a victim class. And it doesn't matter, as Tucker said, they ignored reality. It doesn't matter what reality says about the particular scenario. They've made up their minds. And they're going to do what they're going to do. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter that every qualified individual who raises a hand and says, wow, that won't work. It doesn't matter what they have to say. It doesn't matter that person after person after person steps forward and says, that's a bad idea. Here's why that's a bad idea. It doesn't matter. Again and again and again, we see examples of this. I brought you the story not long ago about the 1716? Is that what it was? The thing that the New York Times is doing? The name escapes me, but you know what I'm talking about. The perversion of history. It doesn't matter that hundreds of historians, have written to the New York Times, have called the New York Times, have pled with the New York Times, telling them what they're putting forward about our history is not true. It doesn't matter that historians across America who know the history of our nation have stood up and said, this isn't the way things actually happened. This is not the way things worked. What matters is that progressives have an agenda, they have a story to tell, they have a narrative, and they've got to stick to the narrative in order to convince people that they are actually victims and always have been because this country was founded on creating those victims and using them to its advantage, which is a lie, because this nation was founded on freedom. This nation was founded on liberty because the people who founded this nation, who crafted its government, came from backgrounds and places where that was not true. And they had seen the oppression of government and wanted to craft a nation that was free of that. So it was a government of, by, and for the people. Not some government that operates in closed door rooms out of sight of the people and makes decisions on behalf of the people because it knows what's best for the people. But progressive politicians, people who have dedicated their lives to the political career, those people believe they do know best. As I have said many, many times, progressives believe they are intellectually and morally superior to the rank and file. You. They believe they're intellectually and morally superior to you. And when you disagree with what they have to say, they shake their heads and look down at you with pity because you poor, uneducated, unenlightened thing, you just don't understand how this all works. That's who we're dealing with here. Those people want to force the banking industry to implement diversity and inclusion so that they not only loan to, but they hire people who may not actually be qualified in order to meet requirements set by a progressive government. And as Tucker Carlson reminded us, that happened back in the 90s, and we had a housing crash as a result. It was one of the worst financial disasters we've had in America. One of them. We're still recovering from it. Because progressives got their way. Progressives who have no experience in the real world or knowledge of how finances work in the real world. They operate solely on theory, and the constantly driving function of their lives, which is to be everyone's hero and to rescue them from their own stupidity. So once again, we have people like Maxine Waters and that guy from Texas. These people who have proven again and again and again that they are severely detached from reality. We have these people trying to tell us how life should be run in America. Well, God bless them. And God protect us from them. There's more of this same kind of insanity going on right now in front of us. And it's hitting the headlines. Although the story we just talked about really isn't. The Roger Stone situation. We have progressives in government doing everything they can to drive things a certain direction because they have a narrative which must be upheld. And you may not have heard about this. You may have heard about this. But Roger Stone sentenced to 7 to 9 years for process crimes. He either intentionally or unintentionally got things wrong in the process of working with the investigation. And we already know that the judge in this particular case who sentenced him is a progressive. And now we're finding out that the forewoman on Roger Stone's jury in the Washington, D.C. based case was also a progressive. Stone, a friend of Donald Trump's, was convicted in November for making false statements to Congress. Obstruction. Threatening a friend's dog. The friend testified he didn't take that threat seriously, yet it was still used as an enhancement in prosecutor sentencing, which recommended Stone spend 9 years in prison. More than a rapist. It has been amply pointed out that others have done worse and received less prison time, such as the Senate Intelligence Committee security staffer James Wolf, who swapped sex with New York Times reporter Ali Watkins for stories involving classified information. How long did he get? 2 months. What he did was far worse than anything Stone's done. And Stone has been under a gag order about all of this to this day. Barred completely from posting anything on social media by the judge, the Democrat, Amy Berman Jackson. Meanwhile, the lead juror in this case, this lead juror's social media was full of attacks on Trump and praise for Democrats like Hillary Clinton. Wow. Something about that doesn't sound very fair, does it? The more we learn about this particular case, the more we understand that progressives in government were doing everything they could to railroad the Trump administration, to damage as many people associated with Trump as possible. Why? to damage his reputation, Trump's reputation. And you've already seen, you've seen it yourself. Your liberal friends in social media saying, yeah, look at all the criminals he surrounded himself with. Yeah, well, that guy went to jail. That guy's been sentenced. That guy's been sentenced. Oh, really? Look at how and why people like Stone were sentenced. It was all rigged. And it was rigged for one purpose: to destroy the president you elected.
Looking at you, hockey puck.
Looking at you. Yeah. Hey, before I go any further, there's a story that's pretty big right now. In fact, when I do a news scan, this is the one that's popping up the most, and that is Attorney General William Barr fighting back, pushing back against President Trump, tweeting. And there's a lot of talking head speculation going on. I watched some this morning on the news, and I just want to encourage you to step away from this for just a moment and to think about it, rather than just accepting what you're being told by the talking heads and the reactions and the speculation, and actually think about what's happened here. Think. William Barr was under attack because he's going against sanctuary cities. He's going up, he's actually executing the things that you and I have been clamoring for several years. We look at situations and we say, well, that's wrong. Somebody needs to do something about it. Well, finally, this administration and its attorney general are doing something about it. And the progressives are, they're panicking. They're freaking out. They're going crazy. One example is that Jerry Nadler sent Barr a 4-page letter about Giuliani's Hunter Biden Ukraine evidence. He's making demands, and that's out of a panic. So the leftists, the progressives in government right now, were about to put all of their weight that they could on William Barr. They probably would have, had Trump not tweeted what he did, they probably would have started an impeachment push on William Barr. And then Trump comes out and takes the attention off of him by tweeting about the Roger Stone case. Now, keep in mind, Trump's tweet came after Barr had made the decision and made the call to revisit the sentencing because it was far too severe. And in the mishmash, in this process, we're finding out things about people involved. The four people who quit, they were deep staters. They were anti-Trumpers. The judge in the case, an anti-Trumper. The jury, the lead jurist, the jury foreperson, an anti-Trumper. We're finding out all of this stuff. So that whole case was dirty. And Barr, who communicates on a regular basis with the president about what's going on, because that's how this stuff works. They don't tell you that. Barr is actually at work. This has all been processed, all been done. And then Trump, as a citizen, makes a comment. And, of course, the rabid leftists, the progressives, turn their focus back to him. And now it's about, this whole thing is that Barr is under attack by the president. That's what you see again and again and again from leftist news sources, is that Attorney General Barr is under attack. That the president, they're having a fight about this. They disagree. They're no longer victimized. They're no longer making him the bad guy. Think about how this process has played out. The president has stepped in and taken the focus off of William Barr. And he did it with a single tweet. We have to pay attention to how stuff works, not what people say about how stuff works. You have to pay attention. Because we're dealing with people in this government who have an agenda. And They're doing everything they can to convince the people of America that the president's agenda is evil and damaging to people. There's a story over on WayneDupree.com. Missy Crane writes, "Sometimes I look at these elected officials and I think, how on earth did this person ever get elected? Sheila Jackson Lee is one of those people that makes me question our entire voting process. She's just such a fool. Case in point, during a House Budget Committee hearing, Representative Sheila Jackson Lee suggested President Trump's new budget proposal was like slavery. Trump's program encourages minorities and immigrants to choose work over government benefits, and somehow that's slavery to Sheila Jackson Lee." This is the same woman who asked at a tour of a NASA facility in California about when we planted the flag on Mars. Lee lamented that this spring alone, quote, over 70,000 people, or 700,000 people, whatever, 70,000 people will likely lose food assistance as states begin to implement the Trump administration's expanded SNAP time limit. She went on to try to explain how getting people off of government assistance and helping them get back to work is somehow linked to slavery. Here's what she had to say. I just let her say it.
When Arkansas and other states have begun to implement work requirements and Medicaid, thousands of people have lost their health insurance. This spring, over 700,000 people will likely lose food assistance as states begin to implement the Trump administration's expanded SNAP time limit. And what they're gearing it toward is that in slavery, they begin to characterize the descendants of enslaved Africans as lazy. That's all the stereotypes. And there were laws put in place that if you were picking cotton, you couldn't get assistance. And so this document is trying to uproot the long belief that poor people, particularly African Americans, and now immigrants and others, are lazy. This budget clearly emphasized that, unfortunately, racially charged direction. In cutting Medicaid, in cutting nutrition programs, in cutting housing. And so my question is this.
Congresswoman, that is ridiculous.
Excuse me, I have the time. I have the time, and I'm reclaiming it. I have the time. I have the time.
Mr. Vogt, Mr. Vogt.
Out of order, and my clock needs to stop. You don't have the time.
Now, when the witness tried to actually interject, well, that's ridiculous, he was absolutely right. It was ridiculous. It is a ridiculous assertion that this is slavery. First off, all of the things that she's talking about that were done by people like her, progressive Democrats, leftists, progressive Democrats who were hurt that slavery was abolished. And in the years to come, they victimized black people ever since, used and abused them. So what we have here is legislation which puts limits on how long you can stay on a certain program, because it's supposed to be there as a temporary measure to help you through a rough patch, not to support you for the rest of your life. There's nothing wrong, and you and I probably agree with it on this, and that is that you want to be able to help people who are having a tough time. You do it personally for family members. You do it collectively in churches. You help people who are down and out. Communities gather together and take up collections for people whose houses burned down and who are on tough times, who have families and they've lost their jobs and things like that. We take care of each other. I don't think it's government's job to do that, but you and I look at life that way. So when we have programs that offer temporary assistance, we kind of nod our heads and go, yeah, that's probably a good thing. Temporary assistance. But what has happened over time is that progressives in government have made these programs a lifestyle. They've taken away the boundaries and the limits. And so we have people who spend their entire lives living off of government programs rather than finding ways to get off the government programs. And if you're a liberal, you're probably listening and thinking, well, that's just cruel, mean, that's horrible. No, actually it's not. Because human nature is that we want to support ourselves. We want to support our families. We want to do for those who are our loved ones. We don't want someone else giving us the handout. When my wife and I were going through tough times, we had family step up and say, here, you can stay in this house. I've been trying to sell it. It won't sell. Or nobody will pay me what I think it's worth. So here, you go live here. You need some help with the bills? Let me know. We do that. It's how things work. It's what we do. But it's temporary. Even as a family, you're not going to support those people for the rest of their lives. You're going to have a sit down with them and tell them, hey, you need to find something. You need to do something. You need to make adjustments. We're going to have those hard talks with people. And so in government, we need to have the same attitude. We can't keep paying your bills forever. We can't pay for your cell phone. We can't pay for your high dollar electronics. We can't pay for the flat panel TVs. We can't. It has to stop. And that's just actually doing the right thing. And it's time for me to move along. Have a great weekend. God bless you. We'll see you back here Monday morning for the next edition of The Daily Perspective. Bye-bye.
We'll knock off now and take the next 2 days off. How's that?